You're listening to episode 321 of the Major Issues Podcast, and on this episode, we cover 1999's Mystery Men for its 25th anniversary. The Major Issues Podcast starts right now! Hello, everybody out there in comic book land. My name is George Serrano, aka The Don. And if you're listening to this, you can only be here for one reason. It's a brand new episode of the Major Issues Podcast, brought to you each and every week by comicbookclick.com. And as always, I am never alone, sir. If you could please introduce yourself.
I am Lieutenant Mediocre Gregory Thomas, aka GT Rebirth.
You need to be promoted, GT Rebirth. You need to be promoted. I don't think you are mediocre at all. But we're not alone. Other sir, if you could please introduce yourself.
Indeed, although I consider myself the markiest of the markiest in the group, your Cloudus Maximus, everyone's Cloudus Maximus. We're here in the building, guys.
I got Cloudus Maximus. I've got GT Rebirth here. I've got Cloudus Maximus here. And you know, unless you guys haven't read the description of this episode, it might be quite a mystery to you guys. Celebrating its 25th anniversary this year
is Evolution.
is Mystery Men. A Mystery Men very loosely based off of the Captain. Is it? No, something about Carrot. Some Carrot comic. I'm about to figure it out right now. I thought it was Captain Carrot's Flaming Carrot Comics. Burden's Flaming Carrot Comics. Yeah, it came out 25 years ago. I've been looking for a reason to go back and watch this film after. I probably haven't seen this film since like it came out on DVD, like when, like not Blu-ray, not 4K, any of that kind of stuff. DVD. I wanted an excuse to go back to this film, and I feel like right now is the perfect time because we had a crazy month here where we're looking at things like Madam Web that are not necessarily setting the world on fire, even though I'm pretty sure Sony is setting copies of that film on fire.
I think it's setting Dakota Johnson on fire.
It is setting Dakota Johnson. Because everyone's like, why did you do this? They're bringing her to the front and going, hey, you, why'd you
and
do
to
this?
Her credit, before we move off of that, I am convinced that Sydney Sweeney is already too rising of a star that like it's not even gonna freaking be on
it's
her
not
radar.
Even gonna phase it. We're not even gonna think. We're not even gonna remember she did this movie.
Nah. She's gonna get high marks for that nun film, and they're gonna be like, whatever, Madam White.
And it's rough. It's rough because you would think that after all this time, we've come to a sort of, you know, crossroads in superhero media, the evolution of the genre after all these years. You know, you would think that we would see some more brighter spots, but we're kind of losing the aim here, the mark with a lot of these films. They seem to not remember what they're about and why they were made in the first place. So I thought it would be a cool thing to go back and look at a movie that was also panned, was considered a blockbuster, had a blockbuster budget, didn't make half of its money back, full of stars that are all over movies and television at the time, and kind of see how it holds up. GT, I believe you have seen this film before. Do you remember the first time watching this film?
I don't remember the first time watching it. I do remember just always liking it. I thought it was very interesting. It had a very strong marketing campaign, especially when you consider it was backed by the hit track known as All Star.
Yes.
By
yes.
Smash Mouth. The song that would haunt them forever.
This is the film I think of when I think of All Star. I know a lot of people think of Shrek. I know Shrek has become the film. But like GT said, when it came to the marketing of this, the song and this film were synonymous. And yeah,
the
now
music video is a Mystery Men thing.
And now All Star is at their concerts going, can I play? Can't get enough of you, baby. Play All Star. Play All Star. Like, oh, come on.
God damn it.
So to you, GT, after all of these years, what is your opinion on Mystery Men, spoiler free?
I think it's pretty good. What's a word you like to use? I'm not even sure how if it's got the correct meaning. I think it's just kind of quaint.
Yeah.
I think it does its job very well. Like, I think it tells its story very well. And I think it's kind of, you know, I think it's an interesting story about, like, what if you are the other guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The C or like, D squad.
Yeah. Like what if the main dude, you know, isn't there and these nobodies have to fix the problem?
Right. Right. Basically how they made the Justice League look in the Justice League. It's like Superman's gone. I guess the rest of us have to kind of figure this out. And Batman's like, I'll die trying. You're like, what's going on? No one asked you to die trying. We said we were going to try to figure this out. Jesus. But yeah, we've come so far from films like this.
Can I also jump in? Not necessarily a spoiler, but like kind of ahead of its time, seeing as the concept we have now with the idea of corporatized superheroes.
100%. I agree.
100%. I think that's very interesting. Not an idea that would be like really developed and delved into for some time, but like an always an interesting concept of like what if those bigger than life, you know, obviously very famous people were part of the machine.
Yeah. And what would copycats look like? People inspired by them who also think that they have a chance to do the same thing or better.
So
like if you've seen this before, you kind of know what to expect. I will leave my opinion for last. We have a unicorn in the room. We have somebody who's never seen Mystery Men, not a lick of it.
Centaur, even. Say,
I have gone. So when I found that, I picked this up because I didn't see it. Number two, I wanted something that I haven't seen before. And number three,
it was $4. No.
They paid you to watch it.
Yeah, right.
and number three is just, I need, like, it's even seeing the cover for the movie was just outrageous. But in the same sense, watching it, I knew it was gonna be, I don't want to say bad, but I just know it didn't take itself too seriously.
Right.
I feel like the whole cast knew what they were in for, and I want to say they adapted appropriately.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so, and that goes, I feel like that goes a long way for the movie, because I can sit here and say the movie is bad, but I can't tell you it's super bad. I can't tell you, like, all the bad things are just collectively a bunch of little things, maybe all of them cheesy things, you know?
I can see that. You know, I will say that I will not argue against it being bad. If someone came out and was like, oh, that movie is bad, I'm not going to argue against it. But I found myself enjoying myself in it, if that makes any sense.
I was going to say, I had my moments in between the jokes, in between things happening during scenes and stuff like that I found myself genuinely enjoying. So to actually say it's a bad movie, yes, but to make it seem like it's worse than what I had made it before I started the pod was kind of unfair.
No, it's fine. And another thing is, I believe,
remember, I haven't come down, so I have to, like, you know, level myself.
yeah, definitely.
If one were to make a distinction between the two results, I'd say, like, is it a bad movie because you think it was, like, poorly done, or is it just, like, I didn't care for it, it wasn't for me?
In my opinion, or in Jarvis?
I'm asking you, Jarvis.
I don't want to say that it wasn't for me, because like I said, I kind of enjoyed some of the moments in the movie. the fork throwing, the going invisible, you know, for examples.
Right.
It was decent, but it was a little bit ahead of its time, I will say, because there are certain elements in that's like. And I agree with the aspect of the machine more, you know.
Yeah.
Because who's doing that now? The boys are doing that. They've been doing that for
to a tremendous degree.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of when I started watching, I kind of got a little vibe almost or borderline Homelander, because he's, you know, he's not really fond of the little guys and stuff either. So he's,
right.
He likes the big league it almost. Well, not almost. He is big league in it.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of promise in this film. I think it's hampered down by the filmmaking of this time. You know, this idea of like, oh, you know what? We'll just grab a director who's never directed a film before, similar to Catwoman, right?
Really?
We're going to get some guy off the street. Yeah, he's a commercial director. It was Kinka Usher. He was a commercial director. He is the director known for bringing the Yo Quiero Taco Bell dog into the prominence.
Nice.
Or the Chihuahua.
He's good with me then. No.
Okay. Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. And I've got some funny stories about the production of this stuff before we get into all the spoiler heavy stuff of going through the plot and stuff. But right off the rip, Mystery Men is a 1999 superhero comedy directed by Kinka Usher in his feature-length directorial debut. It's written by Neil Cuthbert, loosely based on Bob Burden's Flaming Carrot comics, starring Ben Stiller, Hank Azaria, William H. Macy, Greg Kinnear, Claire Forlani, Kel Mitchell, Paul Rubens, Janine Garofalo, Wes Studi, Jeffrey Russ, Lena Olin, Eddie Izzard, and Tom Waits. The film details the story of a team of lesser superheroes with unimpressive powers who are required to save the day from a criminal genius when Champion City's resident superhero gets captured. The film was announced in mid-1997. Now, put your brains here, gentlemen. With a raft of comic book adaptations, including Blade, Virus, which I've never heard of, Superman Lives, which was canceled, X-Men, which won't come out for several years, Fantastic Four, similar, The Hulk, Captain America, The Submariner, Iron Man, Daredevil, Silver Surfer, Hellboy, Concrete, Green Hornet, and 26 other titles.
Wow.
So this feels more like throwing things against the wall to see what sticks. Like, they just, we got all these properties, and we're gonna see what happens here.
Trying to find this Virus film now.
Some of these didn't get made, right? Because Superman Lives never got made. The Submariner got made.
True.
So at one point, there was a comic legend who was penned for this. They offered this man not only the starring role of The Shoveler, but as a director. Mm. That man was Danny DeVito. They were gonna give him $13 million to do this, but he wanted
have $13 million.
He wanted to produce the soundtrack. For some reason, that was super important to him. And when he couldn't, he dropped from it. So then Ben Stiller was approached to rewrite the script and direct, but eventually he turned it down, saying he didn't want to do it. He was like, it's just too much. Jeez. It was a big movie, and I didn't want to take it on. So one of the first people brought in for this was Janine Garofalo, who signed on, and she ended up persuading Ben Stiller to appear in the movie because she met the director, and she thought he was nice, and the money was good. So she was like, yeah, come, you know, join on this film.
She hooked the homie up.
Nice. Mystery Men received generally positive reviews from critics, but was a box office bomb. It only made $33 million on a budget of $68 million. Now check this out. In 2011, in an interview with the AV Club, Hank Azaria claimed that during production, Kinka Usher declared, "I'm going back to commercials when this is done. I've had enough. I'd much rather do my cool little one-minute shorts that I make than deal with all this nonsense."
Well, then,
that's on the set. That's not even like a post set interview or whatever. Like, that's on. That's literally with people around them.
It's almost like it might be a lot of pressure.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. According to Hank Azaria himself, the cast argued constantly with each other over the comedic tone of the film, which I can see, because almost every comic in here is a different kind of comic, right? Like, almost every person in here does a different sort of comedy. So more, some are more slapstick, some are more dry humor, some are more, I mean, Hank Azaria, he's Simpsons. He's literally goofy voices, and, you know.
Yeah. Some of them were Dane Cook,
which, whatever sort of comedy that is. So Janine Garofalo disliked the film. She said it was very long hours and very little got accomplished. It was one of those alleged blockbusters that was all over budget and overhyped. It went from being a great script when it was sent to me to being, in my opinion, a fairly mediocre non-event. But it was nice to get paid that much to sit around. I have no idea what they were trying to do with the film, but they sure didn't accomplish it.
Also, it was definitely
somewhere Ben Stiller is just like, you talked me into this.
Yeah, it's the Meeseeks. You wrote me into it. Well, she wrote me into this. Why did you wrote me into this?
Thank you, George, for making the only goddamn Rick and Morty reference I'll get.
Yes, always, bro, always. But yeah, like, I kind of disagree with her. I do think that they accomplished a superhero parody film of sorts. I honestly believe. With better actors and a little bit of better writing, this plot today would work.
Yeah.
But I think we're more...
You would replace the spleen, bro?
The shuffle.
Wow.
The spleen. Oh, we're going to get into all that kind of stuff. But yeah, like...
If not for the overpoweredness of it all, like this... On paper, this could be a season of The Boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
It totally can. And yes, it's star-studded for 1999. There's like a Michael Bay cameo in this.
I was gonna mention that way later on into the episode because I didn't look up who directed or anything like that. But when I saw him, I was like, oh, maybe
I missed him.
You actually have a feature film director hiding as a cameo, and you get the
crazy.
But I think he might have been doing commercials there as well at that time as well. So that's pretty nice. Interesting.
Well, I guess one was able to take the burden.
But I don't blame Mr. Usher for the failings of this film at all. He sounded like the experience really took a lot out of him and left him feeling unmotivated and fatigued. If only he had a little product called Magic Mind. You see, as a content creator and founder of Comic Book Click, I've been on a quest to keep my energy up all day, and plain old coffee wasn't doing the trick. Luckily, I stumbled upon this tiny little energy shot earlier this year, and it's been really doing wonders for me. I've gotten into the habit of downing these little green shots each morning, and man, am I hooked. They really set the vibe for a super productive day, and you'll usually catch me sipping on them while cruising to work in my car, and it's a perfect start to my mornings. I found that I'm feeling way less stressed and anxiety-ridden since I dropped the massive amounts of coffee, and I get no jitters. Not only does this stuff amp up my productivity, but also has this cool compound called L-theanine. I think I said that right. That naturally chills me out and regulates my stress levels. It also has natural ingredients, including lion's mane mushrooms, which are known to reduce anxiety and inflammation, but also has my back when it comes to keeping my brain sharp. It's like I'm a superhero preventing neurodegeneration and getting my neurons a little extra boost for regeneration. Honestly, this stuff's been a game changer for me. If you've ever struggled to hit that 100% on some days, I totally recommend giving it a shot, all pun intended, that little green shot. It might do wonders for you, as it's done for me. And luckily for you, the folks over at Magic Mind are looking out for the listeners of this very podcast. If you visit www.magicmind.com/major issues, you can enjoy up to 56% off your Magic Mind subscription and 20% if you use 20% on a one-time purchase with my code major issues. Come on, bro. Talk about a hookup. Head over to magicmind.com/major issues. Enjoy up to 56% off of your subscription and use our code major issues to get 20% off a one-time purchase. Don't miss out on this limited time offer because magic or not, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Are you gentlemen ready to get in on all of this? I should have a superhero suit and have a little Magic Mind patch on it as well. And Magic Mind patch on it as well. Oh my God. Are you guys ready to get all up in Mystery Men?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, so our story takes place in the fictional city of Champion City, where the amateur superhero trio consisting of Mr. Furious, played by Ben Stiller, who supposedly gains immense strength when he's enraged, the Shoveler, William H. Macy, a brawler who is great with a shovel, and Blue Raja, Hank Azaria, who is incredibly accurate with throwing cutlery, and they are out there trying to establish their reputation as superheroes. However, they ain't got no experience. All they do is fight, and I don't think they really have any powers, like real tangible power. I mean, Raja can aim things. That's like some sort of power, right?
See, when you say what you said, when you mention the backstage stuff, like you said before, it makes it sound like they just filmed them fighting.
Yeah, right. arguing all the time. Yeah. And yeah, man, all this stuff just ends up leading to various setbacks for this superhero trio, disappointment, causing no one to really take them seriously. They have an honest attempt where they try to stop a robbery, but their efforts are overshadowed when the champion of Champion City himself, Captain Amazing, played by Grant Kinnear, shows up. So this was a little bit of a fun opener, a bank robbery, and then our guys go in, but yeah, completely ineffective. No skills. Who do you think has the most talent on this team?
To be fair, the Blue Raja, bro.
You going Blue Raja? He won't throw a knife.
He won't throw a knife, but the man, he can throw, bro. He can, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Dangerous.
What about you, GT? Who are you sponsoring?
I was going to go with the Shuffler. That thing takes some skill to wheel around, you know?
Yeah. And he has a good Captain America speech on it whenever he wants to.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. I mean, Hank Azaria just makes me laugh because you can hear a little bit of Simpsons in everything he does, just because he does so many voices on the show. So yeah, he's great. Ben Stiller, this is gonna sound crazy, has really good comedic timing. He doesn't have like a bunch of like jokey lines. He has regular lines, but it's his timing that I feel like it makes them effective.
He's also very good at being punchable,
like petulant, like a child, kind of like,
yeah,
a brat.
Like I could punch you in the face and not feel bad about it.
He might feel
good.
He's like lazy boy, and you. And then like 5 minutes later, he's like, lazy boy and recliner. Yeah, that's what you guys are, lazy boy and recliner. Like, just the timing on that.
He was like, really thinking about that. You're real proud of that, ain't you, brother?
Yeah, it took him way too long. My favorite line he throws in this, and it was so funny, I might just start using it in my regular life, is, don't correct me, it sickens me.
What? When he's talking to him in the limo to Frankenstein,
it sickens me. Greg Kinnear is great as Captain Amazing. He looks almost like Homelander and has that kind of dejected, hey, I've done this a million times sort of affectation him.
You know why I'm here.
Yeah, exactly. And just like the I was gonna say the heroes and villains, I don't know what, just like the Seven in The Boys, they are sponsored by various companies and thus paid handsomely for their superhero duties. But Captain Amazing finds himself in a dilemma because his really good crime fighting skills have rendered the city the safest it's ever been. So with the lack of
no crime,
it reminds me of Lego Batman, no more crime. And they do a riot to celebrate that there's no more crime, that this car's overturned, they're on fire.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do.
You want to know what kind of energy Greg Kinnear gives me in this scene? Mm. It's like the local indie show that brought in the big time wrestler who's now just like, doesn't actually want to talk to anybody, just wants to do his magic, get out.
He's a formerly known as coming into the locker room. You know, can't use that name, but hey, man, you saw me on TV. I was in that battle royal. Don't give me no crap. So with a lack of formidable adversaries, many of them either deceased, in exile, or behind bars, his corporate sponsors are withdrawing their support. In a bid to rekindle the need for his services, amazing, operating under his civilian superhero guise, billionaire lawyer Lance Hunt advocates for the release of his arch nemesis, supervillain Casanova Frankenstein, played by Jeffrey Rush from a mental
institution.
Yeah. It also reminds me, I don't know exactly what, someone's going to yell at it, because yell at me when listening to this, but it reminds me of the name that the kid chose for himself in Big Daddy. Wasn't it like Frankenstein something
or yeah, other? It was Frankenstein, I think.
It was something Frankenstein. I can't remember what it was. They let him name himself, so he like,
yeah, it was Frankenstein.
Yeah, one of his names was Frankenstein. I gotta do some math, but I think this is, at the time, this was Jeffrey Rush's biggest film, which is bonkers considering the millions he's gonna end up making for playing Barbossa in Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's where I knew the name from.
Yes, he is Captain Barbossa, and in this he's doing the most cartoonish German accent.
he had me laughing during the movie, bro.
Yes, he is chewing all the scenery, possibly because he wants another job or possibly because he hasn't been on better sets. I haven't figured it out yet, but he's definitely having fun here. So he's like, boom, I'll break out my biggest nemesis, I'll fight him, make more money, it'll be what it is. But the scheme goes awry. Upon his release, Casanova, accompanied by his henchman Tony P and the Disco Boys, demolish the asylum, effortlessly outsmart and capture Amazing, and set the stage to unleash his psycho fraculator, a device capable of fatally distorting reality upon the city. And that just sounds like another Simpsons, right? Like, dive and a psycho fraculator. So we see a bit of our superhero trio's personal lives when they aren't on the job. The shoveler comes home to an adoring wife who is tired of his superhero antics, although his children try to keep him motivated. Mr. Furious works at a scrapyard, junking cars, and is not taken seriously by his elderly boss. And Blue Raja is really an American, pretending to be British, who lives with his mom and doesn't seem to have any friends. GT, who is the most pitiful of the bunch in this circle?
it's got to be Blue Raja for me.
Yeah, Blue Raja. Is it the mom?
The only thing that's real is the aim. That's it.
Yeah, like, wait, what do you mean? The whole, like, I put on an accent and I wear this with good lord.
Yeah,
but it's also like stuck with his mom and doesn't know how to even speak to her.
He also has to work on his branding, because if you have to keep explaining yourself and why you're the Blue Raja that doesn't wear any blue, I think you should look back at that. Jarvis,
you know, I'm trying hard here not to go Blue Raja, but you know what? I'll go Invisible Boy.
Oh, you think he has the worst family life?
I think I'll go Invisible Boy, bro. The squad pulled up to the portal.
Oh, yeah,
you know, yeah, and he told his dad, "I'm gonna go, you know, go upstairs with three strange men. Strangers."
What strange man? So, and didn't even flinch.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it.
Just kept reading the newspaper. So I'm like, all right.
To me, one of the funniest parts of this film is just how pitiful Mr. Furious is. Like, he can't get this old lady to take him seriously. He can't get the girl at the diner to take him seriously. I mean, eventually he does. But it's like, man, he can't get his team to take him seriously. Like, at several points, they just walk away from him where they decide to go on without him. So he's the one that I feel the most bad for. Like, when he's trying to, like...
And even the diner is the worst kind of rush to get the girl thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Like, ooh.
No.
I do not buy it at the end. I don't know how he got there. This could have been one of those many things that they argued about. I heard that in one cut of this film, she had much more to do and actually helps to stop Casanova. So,
It's like she might have actually, like, had a... Like, yeah, like, there's no actual, like, moments where it's just, like, where the waitress is finding out, like, oh, this dude's actually kind of okay. Like, no. That never happens.
And, like, I can't remember, like, I mean, yeah. And he's acting all weird and crazy and standoffish in the diner, so it's like, she must have really saw past those hard edges to the, to my man Phoenix Dark, or whatever his name is.
Oh, my God.
Which we'll get to. We see that saving the city is what gives these guys motivation. After being one up by Amazing at the robbery, the trio split up and Mr. Furious heads to Frankenstein's place to check things out. During a surveillance mission at Casanova's mansion, Mr. Furious witnesses the capture of Captain Amazing and promptly alerts his fellow team members. They try to rescue the heroes themselves, but it is shown that they are terribly outmanned and outgunned and need more people. I love how they just beat on them. They just, like, they came to the house and then everybody just came outside and they just beat on them.
I don't want to look past them, those crazy binoculars, because the first time they used them just then, I was like, okay, I guess this is what we got, right? And right. They used them again. I think it was Spleen and Invisible Boy, and he put up the he put them up to his face, and they made like this sound, like if they were just turning on. And then I asked myself, I'm like, why is the place look so far?
All right, if they have binoculars. So yeah, I love that, and I love how like. The reason why these three don't take the guys who beat their ass seriously is because they don't have a gimmick. Like, they get up there and they're like, look at you guys. You guys are disco or what? Like, he's not even wearing a gold chain. He's not even wearing whatever. And they just beat the hell out of them. So I found that really funny.
I thought that was going to be the psych out. I thought there was a plan behind that. But then when I realized there was no plan behind it.
Absolutely no plan.
And the next cut was them on the ground, surrounded. Getting beat down by various items.
We end up meeting the Spleen, played by Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman fame, who was cursed by a gypsy as a child when he blamed her for a fart he created, and now his flatulence is deadly. But even with a semi-superpower, he's only reluctantly folded in as our heroes find him repulsive. When I was a kid, I found him repulsive. I was a little bit better this time around, but the first time I saw this film, I thought he was the most annoying, ugly looking. Just, I didn't want him around, basically. And Paul Rubens is doing a great job to portray that. Like, he on purpose is like snorting and, you know, like he has like a shh, shh kind of thing with his voice. He has terrible teeth, bad acne, horrible clothes. What do you guys think of the Spleen?
Whatever they did to his face was working.
Yeah, I was gonna say that his face made me like sink into my shoulders, like heebie-jeebies. Yeah.
It also sets a different standard, right? Because we've been watching this, and we can kind of get from just watching it that our heroes aren't the A-team. But what happens when the D team is hiding from somebody? That guy got to be EF, right? G. So I'm like, wow, there's worse people. Like, we're laughing at our guys for being ineffective. Oh, yeah, they showed up there. They had no plan. They had no weapons. They got their asses kicked. We're going to meet a bunch of people coming up that, man, it's crazy that they call themselves heroes. It is through the Spleen, though, that we find an invisible boy, Cal Mitchell, who can turn invisible so long as no one can see him. A part of the underground soup community himself, he has his own connections, and through word of mouth and a series of auditions, they evaluate all the amateur talent in Champion City and come up empty-handed. Luckily, before they leave, they meet the bowler, Janine Garofalo, whose championship bowler father was murdered. She keeps his skull encased in a bowling ball, and even though she can toss it with pinpoint accuracy, she does get some stare downs when she begins to talk to her father as if he's there. Someone who had no idea what was coming, Jarvis, how did you take the bowler?
I thought that was, okay, so the spin with that was okay. She does the whole, her gimmick is the bowling, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
But then she takes out the ball. I was like, oh, cool. That's a real badass bowling ball. And then when she starts, when her gimmick unfolds all the way, I'm like, oh, her dad is in the bowling ball.
A little sick. It's a little sick.
But the joint behind it is that he's actually, you know, I guess his spirit is in the bowling ball.
I guess I gotta ask you, do you think his spirit's in the pony ball, or do you think she's just fucking crazy?
I don't know, bro, because every time she throw that thing, that thing goes.
Aside from All-Star, one, like, thing burned in my head from this film is the sound of this bowling ball. That constant warbling sound. I never heard anything like that before in a film before. It, like, had its own gravity and, like, power. So, yeah, that, and I immediately when I saw her do her demonstration, first thing I thought was, that thing doesn't obey the laws of physics at all. I remember that. GT, how did you feel about being reunited with the bowler? And what is your background with Janeane Garofalo?
Absolutely none, because it's probably this film.
Okay.
I don't think I knew who Janeane Garofalo was until this movie. And, like, she kind of comes in and she sort of, like, has the most gravitas to me of the entire, like, cast. Because the rest of those dudes are just sort of hapless, and she's the only one who looks like I'm going after something.
Right. Even if it's not the right way, she has the direction she's going.
Yeah.
I can get that.
So, like, I'm spending a lot of this movie like, okay, like, what's her deal? What's the gimmick here?
As a child who inappropriately watched a lot of Comedy Central in my young days, I knew Janeane from doing stand-up, and she was on a bunch of comedy-based things, but she was the Daria of, you know, stand-up comedy. She was a woman, but incredibly dry. Really intelligent, though. Really, really smart. I think she also cameos in How High? Is How High the movie I'm thinking about? I think she's in that as well. But yeah, it was fun to see her again. She hasn't done much since, and you already saw how she felt about the film, so that's that. Empowered by their newfound team, they launch an ambush on Casanova's limousine, only to find that their efforts merely succeed in irritating the supervillain. Let's break this down a little bit. So they circle the limo. Shoveler just starts to bang on the limo with his shovel, like just dent in parts of the limo. Raja locks the door with a fork. I don't know if that was on purpose, but that definitely happens at one point.
With accuracy.
The spleen just farts through one of the windows in an attempt to do something. But is anyone as ineffective as Mr. Furious, who's standing on top of the...
You're going to tell him he's useless? He's throwing a fit on top of the limo.
At one point, he's trying furiously to rip the decal, the emblem off of the car. He can't take it off, and then he just starts stomping and dancing on top of the limo while yelling, "The roof is on fire!" Absolutely ridiculous.
This is when I knew.
Yeah.
Yep. That's when I know. I was like, "Oh, they don't take this shit seriously at all right now." I'm with it. Let's go. What else this got?
Yeah. They're not very good at this.
Now you're just like all in, like, okay, just go fucking crazy now.
We've gone full cartoon. It's in this same scene that Tony P or whatever says, like, oh, you're the bowler's daughter? Yeah, I killed him. Like, just like he's just sitting in the middle, like, oh, yeah, by the way,
I'm a killer.
Yeah, I'll confess. I killed him.
Not only that, but did you guys see, I don't know if you noticed, but did you see or notice when they pulled off and they made that left?
I don't think so.
Oh my God, ridiculous. They leave, the car hangs the left, right, and I'm thinking, I go, so much of a hard left that I go, hold on, they what is this, a psyche mic that they turn around?
Come back around?
I'm looking at the headlights. They're about to whip it. I thought they were about to whip it around. And right. Then the tail of the car just I guess, fixes itself, and they just keep going left.
Someone's really trying to spin the hell out. So in the aftermath of their quote-unquote victory celebration, our now drunk team of do-gooders faces a near-death experience when Tony P and the Disco Boys retaliate for the earlier limo incident. They're basically, they're surrounded.
They ran into them coming out of the bar.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, there's a lot of confrontations. Like, they meet these people like what, four times?
Just saw what you meant. That freaking car almost completely spins out.
They're surrounded. They got guns to their heads, and their lives are spared by the timely intervention of the Sphinx, a mysterious superhero whose legend precedes him and who also offers to train them, criticizing them for how they handled Casanova previously. Now, while later on we can suggest that maybe the Sphinx is not all that he purports to be, when he's first mentioned in this film, he's mentioned as somebody who can destroy guns with his mind, and that's what he does, right? What are you guys thinking in this moment? Like, is this the real deal kind of thing, or were you guys waiting for the other shoe to drop? GT, I'll start with you.
Yeah, that is one of those few moments where the movie is very weird about, like, who actually has actual powers and who are just a bunch of dummies.
Yeah.
And you're always wondering, like, whose shoe is going to drop, if they drop at all.
Do you think there should have been a clear-cut or ambiguous sort of middle ground with this? Like, do you think they should have made a choice that either no one has powers or everyone has powers, or maybe done a bit of ambiguous kind of, well, maybe, like, the Invisible Boy stuff I thought was ambiguous until they just kind of showed it. Like, okay, well, it is what it is.
I think the Invisible Boy stuff is actually a little interesting. Other than that, like, I think it opens doors for you if you don't explain it.
Yeah, I agree.
I actually think they're better off just not explaining it and just, like, allowing for every possibility instead of explaining it and only allowing a possibility that fits in the correct box.
Right. Then you got to check the rules for all your universe, right? Once you start establishing stuff like that.
Did you recognize the Sphinx?
Did I recognize? No, but I found out after the fact. And I can't remember the gentleman's name.
Wes Studi.
Oh, that's what I said him in earlier in the thing.
Yes. Who I will always just go like, oh, it's freaking Sagat.
Oh, yes. I think he got a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame last year.
He probably did. Good for him. I know he's done a lot more stuff, and I think he's even got some, like, I think he might have, like, some Shakespeare experience. But for the most part, what I remember is, like, fucking Street Fighter movie.
That's another movie I think a lot of people signed on to under false pretenses. I come on. They must have saw the game, saw the money the game was making, and was like, oh, come on. How could this hurt?
It feels like there's a lot of that happening.
Yeah, right? Despite the Sphinx's unconventional team-building exercises and his penchant for rhetoric, Mr. Furious becomes increasingly annoyed and decides to quit the group. Undeterred, the remaining members thrive under the Phoenix's guidance. Recognizing the need for additional firepower, the team seeks out Doc Heller, played by Tom Waits, a specialist in non-lethal weaponry, to equip them for the impending battle. Encouraged by his new girlfriend Monica from the diner, Mr. Furious ultimately rejoins the team for the upcoming challenge. So this is a training montage, very superhero trope related.
What do you think? Why is his feet in the watermelon?
Oh, he never told him to do that. I have no idea why his feet are in the watermelon. Jarvis, what did you think of the Sphinx and his training montage, if you will, or were you more like,
if a man can cut several guns in half, I'm going to train with that man. All right,
that's quite fair.
Whatever he says goes.
I couldn't figure out if this film was trying to say he was a charlatan or not.
No, see, my point on that is that he, like a lot of other guys on here, is deeply entrenched in his own gimmick.
Ah, okay.
That's why he talks like that.
Yeah. Like, everyone has a, like, it's again, this movie is the most professional wrestling thing ever. Everyone's got a gimmick.
Yeah, yeah. I popped, I'm not gonna lie, when he said the thing about, like, if you don't control your rage, and then Spencer was like, what, the rage is gonna control you?
Rage control, yeah.
And he's like, what, that's what you're gonna say, right? Yeah, you're totally gonna say that. It
really made not exactly.
Yeah, he was like, what, to go down I have to go up, to pull I gotta push, like, what? I get everything you're saying here. It was making me laugh because he kind of was doing that. That's exactly what he was doing. It was all fortune cookie wisdom, like, yeah, it was all stuff, yeah, that sounded cool, but, like, so that's why, again, like, when Furious saw through it, I'm like, is this to tell me that this is not all that it says to be? But again, like Jarvis said, split guns in half, so, you know, like, he does seemingly have some power to split guns with his mind. Were any of you guys surprised that they stood with Sphinx over Furious? I'll start
not
with you.
All.
No,
not at all. Sphinx is the one who was whether or not you want to believe his stuff, or whether or not you want to say, like, he talks silly, like, Sphinx is the one telling all these people to believe in themselves and stick together.
Yeah,
that's why true. He's the one. You? He's the one putting the affirmations out, bro.
Yeah. He was making people feel better about themselves. I find it funny how frustrated or furious Mr. Furious got with this whole thing. Like, he really didn't see the point in any of this, and really felt like they all kind of were riding his jock a little bit, right? And this makes his jock a little bit. Because he was, like, the best of them, you know? So, like, they all, like, teach me. He's like, I don't need to learn anything. So I thought that dynamic was really, really funny. And, you know, maybe that's a bit of that backstage drama leaking out.
Maybe.
Doc Heller, who's played by Tom Waits. Tom Waits known more for music, but he has dabbled in acting. A little fun fact about him in this film. Apparently, he is notoriously bad at remembering his lines, so he wrote his lines on his hands and fingers, which is why he's constantly looking at his hands and fingers in his delivery for some of this stuff. It makes him look eccentric, but he really is just reading his
lines. He's trying to get through the scene.
He's doing the Marlon Brando, Jor-El, the Dwayne, speech is written on the baby. The speech is written on the baby. I think it's like he's holding the baby. He's reading.
That's my a real son. Thing that happened.
Yeah, it's like on the blanket or something. It's like on the. He was doing that at one point. At one point, the rumor was Marlon Brando got so crazy that he demanded to not read the script and have an earpiece in and have them tell him what his line is before he said it. That he got that. You know, diva-ish in his
Marlon Brando wanted to do, like, the what is it, the teen movie gimmick where somebody is feeding you the line?
Yes, yeah, with the hat with the antenna sticking out. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what he wanted to do. And couldn't even be bothered to say
beautiful.
And couldn't even be bothered to say Krypton the right way, which is, I think, is the worst part about all this.
Krypton. Oh, God.
My son Krypton.
Has anyone ever, like, done that since? Like, use that in the movie.
Pronunciation?
I feel like there needs to be somebody, at least disparagingly, who just calls it Krypton to be a dickhead.
Yeah, the Daxamites. There's some Daxamite out there calling it Krypton. So, I love that Furious rejoins the team, and I love that they're going through their affirmations, and it's like, I believe in my powers, and everyone's like, I believe in my powers, and like, I believe in the powers of my teammates. Like, no one has any faith in anyone else on the team but themselves. I like that he made them make their own suits. I thought that was pretty cool. But what do you guys think about these non-lethal armaments? What do you guys think of of this
if we
stuff.
Kill him, we can't send him to jail, bro.
Yeah, that's true. Anyone got a favorite gadget?
I can't think of any gadgets. I do remember just getting the gag of just like Blue Raja finally learning to actually like hide. The forks just made him aim better.
Yeah, that way he could just.
Yeah, because if your enemy can't see you, something, something, something.
Yeah.
I like the blame thrower.
there's a blame. Oh like my god!
Name,
yes,
I like the name of the blame thrower more than I actually do like the blame thrower.
Yeah, yeah. They got tornadoes in cans.
That was cool, but
the shrinky gun that shrinks your clothes so you can't breathe. It can't shrink you, but it will shrink your clothes so you can't breathe. It's all like minor inconveniences. So
I looked away at that part for 2 seconds to see what the baby is doing, and then I look back and I'm like, why are these people clothes choking them? And then
just doubled over in pain.
But yeah, I was just like, what is happening?
Meanwhile, what's his name? Paul Rubens is creepily looking at the poor girl's short skirt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At one point, he tries to rock up on, while they're drinking, tries to rock up on the boiler, and she's like, yeah, never. Like, never. No matter how much I drink.
Beer in the world.
Alcohol.
Yeah. In the
world.
Like, that's a pretty good line there. So armed with their newfound determination, the team launches a second assault on the mansion, this time with a combination of surprise, seamless teamwork, and strategic utilization of their kind of superpowers, and also the unconventional weapons provided by Heller. They overcome Frankenstein's henchmen. This is the scene in which we get the Invisible Boy reveal that he actually can turn invisible. As long as no one's watching him and he's not watching himself. Go ahead, GT.
See, my issue with that is not what he's doing.
What do you think he's doing?
I don't know what he's doing, but like, there is no logical reason for an invisible person's clothes to fall off. He's doing something else, and he has no idea what it is.
Right, that is
the most compelling thing about that character. He tells everyone he can turn invisible because that's the only way he can understand it. But he's doing some complete other bullshit.
it might be a misunderstanding of his powers, like Cyclops. You know how like they have to eventually be like, oh no, he's opening portals to a concussion portals to another dimension or whatever the heck.
I still don't know what Cyclops does.
That's what I'm saying. So maybe it's the case here. Were you surprised, Jarvis, that his powers actually worked?
I was, because like GT, I was just straight up like, all right, he's got to be doing something else since everybody is. But obviously, this is some type of foreshadowing. So when the moment comes, this better be some outlandish or something so off the wall that, you know, that it's gonna get some, you know, some burn. But I'm like,
no, that totally
does happen. But you know,
that totally makes sense. So I just want to talk about Kel Mitchell in this a little bit. I really liked him in this, and I liked him playing the sort of fanboy, I guess is the best kind of word in this. He never says anything mean to anyone. He never, you know, he's always encouraging people. He allows anyone who wants to be on the team to join the team. We didn't get the Waffler, played by Dane Cook, but you know, speaking of which, I'm like, that guy is just about to break out. You know, depending on how you look at it,
sell out the garden.
He is, but then also like go into like a level of obscurity here, forth, untold, or whatever.
It's not his fault. His brother made him broke.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, I heard his brother took a whole bunch of money from him and stuff.
Seeing Dane Cook in this did surprise me. I'm not gonna lie,
there was a couple of people that surprised me. Michael Bay. I also have another one. Matter of fact, three: Michael Bay, CeeLo Green, and
CeeLo Green. Yeah, and Goody Mom.
That was CeeLo Green, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Goody Mom.
And Jennifer Lewis.
Jennifer Lewis is in this.
She's the wife.
Oh yes, she's fantastic. She's amazing in this.
Yeah, I love her though.
at one point, they like let her like sweet talk the camera, cause she goes like if she's holding the shoveler's face, she's talking to the camera and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, they have a nice little. And I love it when he comes back in and she's like, you know, I told you I was gonna leave you. He's like, this is what I gotta do. And I'm like,
so like a lot of them
when we come back,
a lot of. I didn't recognize Michael Bay at all, but a lot of these names are just like it's amusing to me because I had no clue who these people were at release of this movie. So like it took 20 years for me to even understand who Juliette Lewis was, and I was just like, that's that crazy ass woman.
Right.
And like, what's it like? Exilo Green is just like, I didn't know you were even. Are you that old? Are you the round back then?
Yeah, right. I actually missed an entire plot point, so we got to go back a little bit because.
Let's go for it.
First, they go to go save Amazing before they break in and they go to take down Casanova. They go to go save Amazing. Amazing is holding a summit with the Disco Boys, the Furriers, the Frat Boys, the Not So Goody Mob, which is actually Goody Mob, the rap group Goody Mob, which is the group that CeeLo's in.
Oh, is that what? Is that the joke?
Yes. They were called Goody Mob, and in this movie, they're Not So Goody Mob.
They're Not So Goody Mob, right? Yeah.
The Suits and the Susies. And they, I, at one point I'm watching this and I'm like, this is just a out. No, it's, what am I missing? The Warriors. I'm like, this is just a Warriors, you know, ripoff. Like the one guy holding court over all the other gangs. And then he literally says, can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Oh, man. I was waiting for
him to finish the rest of
that. And I'm like,
come on.
You're leaving out my favorite villain group, though, George.
Which one?
Big Tobacco.
Oh, he's on the Suits. he's the leader of the Suits. Because he's like, yes, Big Tobacco. I was just like,
that's a subtle ass line.
That's a hell of a villain name. That's a hell of a pro wrestling heel name. And Big Tobacco making his way down. We only have one thing to blame, Big Tobacco, for what happened here tonight.
like, that's like, it's not subtle, but it's good.
I think the next scene is funny. Like, it wasn't like a chuckle for me. Like, I was like, this has some very comedic, you know, moments in it. It's the saving of Captain Amazing as he's sitting in his chair. They find themselves perplexed because he keeps giving them different instructions. He tells them to flip two switches. And then when they flip both switches and nothing happens, he says something like, flip it again. And he's like, wait. But we already flipped it. He's like, no, flip it again. And then he's like, well, how many times are we supposed to flip it? And he goes, seven times.
Seven flips.
So Blue Raja gets upset because no one's moving. And like, everyone's arguing over the amount of flips. So he makes a flip of a switch and basically kills Captain Amazing.
So I was like, I was over here, man.
Oh, that's the other line that got me. That's the other line that got me. They're like, I think we killed him. He goes, I was standing here the whole time. And then she goes, I'm going to check his pulse. And his hand falls off.
His roasted hand just falls off the wrist.
Just falls off. And he goes, she goes, I don't think he's going to make it or something like that. Like, I don't think he's going to pull through. So this is when, faced with the loss of their charismatic leader, the team plunges into despair over, the seemingly insurmountable odds of saving the city. However, the Shoveler steps up with an inspiring pep talk about egg salad, or I guess kind of about egg salad, rekindling their determination to press on despite the dire circumstances. GT, did you want to speak on this speech, if you will?
This is what solidified just William H. Macy's character being my absolute favorite one.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are many ways to sell a rousing speech out of an egg salad sandwich, but my God, does William H. Macy land it.
Yeah. It's only made a little hokey with like the Battle Hymn of the Republic playing in the background, you know, but I get what they were trying to.
Fair enough.
I get what they're trying to do, but yeah, ultimately, like, halfway through that speech, I'm like, he's not kind of lying. He's not like, he's like, we're the only ones.
We're the other guy.
Like, there's nobody else here. We're the only ones, and we're going to end up doing it. And when we get the scars from it, when we live to tell the tale, we'll be like, yeah, damn right I was there. And I'm like, I'm going to stand up with these guys. Like, these guys are all right.
Yeah.
You know? So I thought that was really, really cool.
And it's just one of those, like, it's always one of my favorite little situations in the sense of just like, well, what if we die? It's like, we ain't going alone, so what's it matter?
Right. And he literally says, like, go say goodbye to your loved ones. Like, go home and say goodbye to your loved ones, which, I'm not going to lie, was simultaneously hilarious and heartfelt, the Blue Raja and his mom scene, right?
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about it, Jarvis?
If anything, I feel like that one hit the most. Because
tell the people what happened.
And it's actually very well set up earlier in the movie.
She, I well, she, bless her. First of all, for having the patience, you know. But she came through, and you know, she, well, he came through first to tell her like, "Hey, I'm gonna go do my thing," and you know, can't lie, I thought she was gonna. I thought she was gonna hit him with the old, "Hey, listen, what are you doing?" You like. And then she,
you can't do this. Attic. This is crazy.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then she came through her own, you know, fine china, you know, so to speak. What
I also think it's interesting, right? Because when she burst through, as GT said, like this is all kind of foreshadowed. When she burst through initially earlier on in the film, he quickly changes from his British accent to his American accent, as if to say like he wasn't doing anything, like, you know, like hiding all his stuff. In this moment, she sees him again.
He's a kid hiding his porn when she walks in.
Right. And when this happens, he goes to do the same thing again. He goes to hide and he goes to go back to his American accent. And then he kind of like shakes himself off of that feeling, stands up taller, and is like, "I am the Blue Raja, mother." Like,
this is what it is.
Yeah, 100%. And almost by letting her in that sense, she can tell that he was being genuine, and then gives him the fine forks and spoons, the fine china.
But she was also thinking he was special.
A little bit. But my favorite, my favorite line is that she was going to give him the fine china on his wedding day, but considering what she's seen, she doesn't think it's going to happen anytime soon. So it's like the sneak diss, like the biggest sneak diss ever. Really, really funny stuff.
I also really appreciate the scene where they're all trying to get Mr. Furious pissed off in the ride.
And they're talking shit to him.
Going, yeah.
You see, you dressed in the middle of a male prostitute.
Oh, yeah, the Sphinx immediately. And
which also, again, comes off like the cast just actually arguing now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what about Janine's what was that thing she kept saying throughout the film? Like, it's one of those like, "I know you are, but what am I" kind of things.
Oh,
when they were going tit for tat every time she argued with somebody.
And it was always the same thing. Like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but she was making me laugh about it because she was finding ways to say it with different inflections. but with different emphasis and stuff. Really, really good comedic timing again. And yeah, Shoveler walks out on his wife. I mean, not walks out, but tells her what it is, and she threatens to divorce him, but he holds on to his guns and he joins up with his team. So like we said, they get into the mansion. Invisible Boy gets them through. However, their victory is short-lived as Casanova seizes Monica as a hostage and activates the Psycho Fraculator, unleashing chaos upon the city. While the team race against time to disable the device. I don't know what
this does.
All it said was it distorts reality, but then kills you? What's the point of distorting reality then?
It turns you inside from the... It fries you from the inside.
That's what Tom Waits said. That was his description of events. But he, Casanova, when he's talking to the gangs, he says, I've created a weapon that's going to make everyone see the world how I see it," which makes sense when you talk about, you know, it being some sort of a mind control thing. But then what's the point of mind control if it kills all the subjects? Yeah. But I'm not a supervillain, so. So while the team race against time to disable the device, Mr. Furious taps into his inner rage and engages Casanova Frankenstein in a fierce battle, suddenly showcasing unprecedented effectiveness in combat. Is this the power of boners, GT?
Probably.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Gets all the blood rushing to the right places?
Yeah. And somewhat...
Did you see not a soul witness? Throw those forks, my guy, with extreme precision and efficiency. Like, wow.
You trying to say we need more Blue Raja merch? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm saying he should be replacing Bullseye.
Did you like his fork related puns? His constant.
I enjoyed them thoroughly. Yep, I enjoyed his forkery.
His forkery. Yeah, he's always forking up. In a daring move, Mr. Furious hurls Casanova Frankenstein into the heart of the Psycho Fraculator, ultimately causing his demise through the reality bending powers of the device. Meanwhile, the remaining team members rally to assist the bowler in dismantling the destructive apparatus and escape the mansion before it implodes. Like I said, I'm happy they gave Mr. Furious this moment, because the other urban legend, right, was that he moved a car. He lifted a bus. Sorry.
A bus, yeah.
He once lifted a bus in a fit of rage. And then when they corner him about it and start asking him about it, he's like, well, you know, there was a driver and he did have his foot on the acceleration. It wasn't really a lift more so than a push.
So it was a push.
The more he talks about it, the more he realizes he didn't really do shit. So like, and then we seeing him on the limo go crazy or go ham. None of that stuff made sense either. So I was really trying to figure out whether or not he had any, because he can't give a speech. No one takes him seriously. He has no powers. So what his effectiveness is, and we got to see that. There's a very thin, like, plot of, like, him being him. Did you catch that, GT, about, like, just be Roy?
Yeah, just be Roy. A lot of that's about, like, just be Roy. And like, this is where the edit comes in, because I'm just like, you have no idea who Roy is.
No, she didn't even know his name was Roy. She didn't know his name was Roy until that day, that moment. Like, because she asked his name, he says Phoenix Dark is his name.
She knows enough to know isn't his name.
Right, right. And again, I don't know if you want this crazy person both knowing where you live and where you work. That is a lot there. But I forget, in the 90s, you had to do that. You couldn't text nobody. You couldn't mess with nobody. You had to... I had to walk him home back in those days. Did you buy this love story, Jarvis?
No, that's what made So I was with it at first, and then it was weird. Like, I was with it, and then I wasn't with it, and then I was with it again, and then I was like, you know what? Screw this whole thing. Screw the both of them and his love.
Ah.
Because I felt like I can tell, there was something that was talked about or argued about behind the camera. So it's like, I feel like they couldn't make up their mind and they just shot whatever they could.
I can see them being like, oh, you know what? She helps them and then she becomes a member of the team. And then somebody was like, you just got that from Men in Black. And they're like, okay, let's scrap it.
How did you know?
yeah. You're right. We'll just go ahead and get rid of it. It's also ironic because at this point in his career, Ben Stiller still hasn't, like, I think something about Mary, maybe right after this, like not too far after this or right before. Like, he hasn't had his breakout film yet. He ends up doing Meet the Fockers and Zoolander in the 2000s, the very, very early 2000s, and thus everything else with Owen Wilson after the fact, right? Like, he completely blows up. But, like, I wonder if this film made anyone lose opportunities. I never saw Cal Mitchell in another movie again that wasn't Good Burger adjacent film.
No, I don't know what they did after this. William H. Macy just got better.
Yes, he did. And he also had already been in Fargo, which I think was Oscar nominated, or at least he was Oscar nominated in it. Sure. So he had a bit, you know, and then he does Shameless for 2 decades, yeah, roughly, you know, and yeah, you know, makes a name in that. So he
just makes a bunch of more money.
Yeah. What's Greg Kinnear doing right now?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know.
I think. And Hank,
is there any world where Greg Kinnear is your lead hero is probably a best up world anyway.
That's also true. And then Hank Azaria is still doing Simpsons or maybe we're at the point where he has said every word he could possibly say, and they just have like a Hank Azaria robot that they just type in the dialogue.
Soundboard.
And it just says everything they got to say. But let's wrap up this film.
Greg Kinnear is still working to this day in films and otherwise.
Can you tell me what the last thing he was in is?
Let's see, there's a movie called Crisis from 2021, and there's a movie called Sight from 2024, based on Ming Wang's autobiography, From Darkness to Sight.
Interesting. Were you surprised they killed Captain Amazing in this, GT?
I was, at the time, yes. I was like, oh yeah. No, they killed the guy.
Who was Louis Guzman in this?
Yeah. I, like, Yeah, he that is the always lost moment. That's what they went there for. And once he's gone, you know, it kind of changes things. But yeah, they're back to it. So as the victorious team emerges from the chaos, they find themselves besieged by a swarm of reporters eager to learn their name. Amidst eternal debates over potential names, one reporter remarks, well, whatever you may call them, Champion City will forever owe a debt of gratitude to these mystery men. But their attention is too absorbed in the ongoing argument to register that they have just kind of sort of been named.
Yes. It'll be in the papers. You'll figure it out.
GT, is this the first film to do this? Because later on, we'll get the we'll get the fantastic thing a little bit. Where he's like, what should we call ourselves, right? And they're standing around. I'm trying to think right now in my big I Am Iron Man. I'm trying to think in my superhero lexicon in my brain. If I could think of other instances of like, well, we got the team together at the end, and now we have to kind of name you guys. So this has to be one of the first superhero team films in theaters.
One of the first team films, yeah. I don't know if it's the first, because I feel like almost every superhero is named by an outside force except for Batman.
Yeah. Well, he has to tell people, right? Like, don't tell him, stop calling me the Bat. My name is Batman. Spread it around. Gotta get that branding on point. But yeah, when I thought about it, I'm like, 1999, I struggle to think of other superhero team films at this time. Roger Corman's Fantastic Four were probably the closest, and that was buried underneath Marvel headquarters.
Wasn't there a Justice League
thing? Not filmed.
Or did that one get canceled?
They had one that they were working on in the early 2000s for George Romero, and that got canceled. But they ended up having the made-for-TV series or whatever the heck was going on there.
Maybe that's something about then, yeah.
That was a terrible one with fire and ice in it. It's not great. It's not great. And the overweight Martian Manhunter's in that one. It's the fattest Martian Manhunter I've ever seen in my life. I don't know.
Stay inside, bro.
I also don't know if this is telling, but none of these people have ever been in a superhero film again. Oof. So I don't know if that's a symptom or of what happened because of this, but you know, it is what it is here. I thought it was
cool that like Janine Garofalo has this like random like heartfelt moment with her dad in the bowling ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And like I said, she sells it. She sells the conversations. She
definitely does. It's funny because when she threw the dad inside of the machine, right, for him to wreak havoc and bust it all up, I did not think he was coming back.
I didn't either.
When she spoke into the bag, I couldn't even see inside the bag, so I just assumed the bowling ball or the skull was in there. Hopefully, it's the bowling ball and the skull.
Yeah. it's like a charred up bowling ball with the skull inside.
Yeah. That's another little fun line when Blue Roger's like, did you take your dad's skull and put it in a bowling ball? And she's like, no, the guy at the shop did it. And I'm like, well, yeah, yes. I guess that is how that works. There is still probably 5, 6, maybe even 7 films I will say is worse than this film. I put of several of the ones I've been bitching about on here.
Is Madame Web worse than this?
Yes.
Does one of the movies rhyme? Yeah. Does one of the movies rhyme with R. Evil?
No. Oh, no. I think Daredevil might be better than this.
Okay.
I think Daredevil's better than this. That's a big word.
That's bold.
No, I liked 03 Daredevil. There's not a lot of
say something so controversial yet. So
I just quick. Didn't. I just didn't like when they fought in the playground. I thought that was like
the watch most, the kid. This man is blind.
It's the most not sexy scene they try to make sexy. It just didn't work for me. Like what's right. going on here? This what is better kid. Than Cat. This is better than Catwoman. GT, it's all better right. than Supergirl.
A lot of things are better than Supergirl. that was it's pain. I look forward to you forcing Dan to suffer it.
One day. It's better than Fanforstic.
Okay, I've actually never seen that one.
What? We got to get you to watch it. We got, that's going to be my job now, is getting people to watch films that they haven't. Because I've had to watch them all for you. No, I love it. It's a labor of love. And again, like, everything fleshes itself out once you cover these blind spots, right? Once you cover these blind spots of movies and realize why this genre went in the direction that it went in, you got to imagine from like 96-7 to about Spider-Man, they're just trying shit, just making things up. Maybe some of the parts are canon to the comics, and other parts were just making up fucking whole cloth. DC,
in this case, just, stuff you've never heard of.
Yeah, DC just took a knee after Batman and Robin. It just took a knee until Batman Begins. They're like, you know what? We're just gonna let y'all. They tried to green light a Superman film. It didn't work. They tried to green light a Justice League film. It didn't work. They were considering a fourth Batman film, a fifth Batman film in that same franchise, and that got canned after the critics panned on Batman and Robin. So, a lot of these early 2000s, obviously this late 90s, but late 90s, early 2000s stuff was hit or miss, and I'll say it again. I do think if this came out 10 years after it did, if it came out in 2009, maybe, this would have been cutting edge. They would have been like, oh, wow. I'm
curious who would have been in it in 2009.
Yeah. This is very loosely based off comics, to the point that I was actually trying to find the comics that they were based on, and I couldn't. I've heard from everyone who has knowledge of the comics that this is the thinnest of adaptations. It would be like me deciding to read 50 issues of Steel before I go watch Steel. You know? It's like, what is this? This has nothing to do with what we're actually covering. So.
Yeah. You just walk in like, this is a completely different movie.
To each his own. Jarvis, as someone who just saw the film, do you ever see yourself seeing this film again?
Yes, I do. But in the same way, probably, that I had, well, not really, because I would probably suggest this. It's like one of those, one I would suggest it to somebody who hasn't seen it before, with the hopes that they would go, it's hideous, I love it.
Oh, like Ant-Man, the daughter?
Yeah, the whole Ant-Man shit. Jesus. You know, so I did ask my brother-in-law right before we sat down if he did see it or hear about it. He told me no, and then I started to tell him about it, and then his eyes just started opening even more. He's like, "What are you talking? What? This is a thing." I'm like, "Yeah, bro.
Diller. That's a heck of a film.
It would have been a dime a dozen now. You know, like now it'd be like, oh, we're doing this. We're doing a parody superhero, whatever. But at the time, man, a bit cutting edge. Sometimes when you're first at the gate, you know, when the trail has not been blazed, you get blamed for the rough territory or the rough road.
You know, maybe I'm typecasting him.
Mm.
This is a James Gunn movie.
Yeah. Well. When I realized that, like, it was a ragtag group of not A-list, superheroes who have to learn how to work together after, you know, sort of kind of being loners on their own, like, that screamed Suicide Squad for me. And they know that they're going to die because they're not great. Like, there's several conversations had in this where, oh, this is a kamikaze mission. Like, we're not coming back from this. I could totally see James Gunn doing his version of The Mystery Men. But we'll just have to...
If there was a remake, if there was a remake, Mystery Men is a James Gunn film, for sure.
But then you got to get Dennis Reynolds from Sunny to play Mr. Furious, because that's all he does is scream about
if we,
shit.
If we really going to do this,
is that a thing?
If we really going to do this, Stiller has to be the one to direct.
Stiller has to be casting over Frankenstein.
Oh my God.
he's got to be... What a name, what a cast. And again, I to my knowledge, all these people are alive. What's Tom Waits doing? Is he alive?
I know Jeffrey Rush is.
I do like the little handshake, the little M-shaped.
I like that too.
The M-shaped handshake. But yeah, a group of ragtag people getting together for a single purpose. How could I not sympathize? It's exactly what we try to do here each and every week on Comic Book Click. And as a part of the Major Issues podcast, which drops every single Thursday. So thank you guys for listening to this episode of the podcast. It was terrific to go over this film. It's a unique experience. This was experience.
A fun shot down memory lane for me. It was
an unexpected joy.
Yeah. And it is like... Some of this stuff becomes formulaic. You know, I do this every week, and we've been doing this every week for 7-ish years now. And so it felt like the palate cleanser. It felt like a palate cleanser. Remember where you were, George, when you were younger. Remember where comic books movies were. Remember how Hollywood chose to see this genre. And then, you know, kind of give yourself a little bit of appreciation for what's going on currently. But,
This feels like a movie you couldn't sequelize because, again, you'd have to explain things again.
Yeah. And I also feel like if you were to sequelize, you almost get into that Kick-Ass 2 territory, right? Where the more you, like, flesh out things and then you add more questions end up being raised, right? Because you have to explain more. And then it bumps up against the logic of the first film.
And who names a city champion city?
Yeah. Were they champions before then, or were they very hopeful?
Because it's also like there's clearly a culture of superheroes. So it's like, who came before Captain Amazing? What is the lore of this city?
At one point, Captain Amazing also riddles off a whole list of villains that he's put away, killed, murdered, whatever. So you got to believe that these guys have been around.
He's been at it for a while.
Yeah. So there is ground to tread in this universe. Let's see if anyone ends up having the balls to do it. But if that were to happen, that would be in the future, which means that you guys would have to keep listening to this podcast to find out and find us covering it. Luckily for you, the Major Issues podcast is available wherever podcasts are found. Podbean, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, the Apple Podcast app, TuneFind, YouTube, Spotify, and more. But the easiest place to find us, comicbookclick.com. It's the one stop for everything Comic Book Click. Merchandise, every episode of the Major Issues podcast, articles written by us, and we're about to have some very, very special company on that website coming soon. We're super excited for quite possibly the biggest collaboration Comic Book Click has ever endured. So, you know, not to titillate the masses much further, but please pay attention to everything going on at facebook.com/comicbookclick, Instagram @comicbookclick, or you can use that hashtag comicbookclick to talk about the newest, hottest, latest, and greatest things to come to comic books and comic book media. You can help support us in many ways. One way is by rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. It's the quickest way for us to grow as podcasters and find out what you like and what you don't. You can go ahead and buy some merchandise. If you go to comicbookclick.com and hit that Shop CBC link, you'll get sent to our Tee Public store where all the merchandise was designed by me, and we get a kickback of every single thing purchased. But last but not least, if you just want to give us money straight up, consider becoming a Patreon at patreon.com/CBC Clubhouse.
Straight up money.
For as little as 10 cents a day, $3 a month, people. $3 a month. Come on, man. That's chump change. That's change in your couch. I get it. Things are hard, but if you can throw some schmeckles our way, then we will definitely appreciate it. So consider becoming a Patreon today so you can help us afford the hardware and the software that we need to keep providing you guys content free of charge. We love doing it, but sometimes it can get a bit taxing. So any help is definitely appreciated. I did that social stuff, whatever, Patreon. I think I've done all my links. We're everywhere. Google Major Issues, Google Comic Book Click, and we're everywhere to be found. But if the people want to find you, GT, where can they find you?
Rebirth GT is what I use on Twitter, even though I don't use it very much. but also you can catch me on the Dirt Sheet Radio Pro Wrestling Podcast. I believe at this point we just uploaded straight live on Wednesday, late Wednesday nights. But you were typically meant to catch it on Thursday morning or whatever it's convenient to you as we speak about the latest week in professional wrestling and whatever else comes to mind. Something to the realm of like discussing when we all used to enjoy Linkin Park releases.
Yes. Who would thought that would be a topical discussion? You know, like,
seriously.
Yeah, man.
And they just released a song. Who thought?
That's what I'm saying. Go follow GT. We'll put a link to Dirty Radio in the link to their link tree. They're all over social media. So we'll go ahead and put a link to that in the show notes. Those are my old running buddies over at Dirty Radio. We might be running together pretty soon in the future. So I'm super stoked for the future of what you guys are doing over there, because you guys are killing it. And yeah, we are set to go places. Because listen, I've been to the future where I do become the latest and greatest thing. We do become the latest and greatest thing to come to comic books and comic book media. But I can't tell you how we do it, because it would mess up the timeline. And next thing you know, The Rock is doing $7 production, presents Mystery Men, and he's found a way to CGI himself as all the characters, a la Eddie Murphy in The Clumps. Finish the story. No one wants that to happen. Make sure you get on the bandwagon.
George is not done ragging on The Rock just yet.
If anything, GT, the recent events have done nothing but, again,
galvanize you.
All I get done is proven right, baby. That's all I get done, baby. That's all we doing out here. That's why that tornado's coming for John. You understand?
Oh my God.
Love you.
Oh no, I hope I have a podcast to actually record tonight.
I love you, Yogi. But yeah, you'll never know what predictions will come true, I said here on the Major Issues podcast. But we're about to close up shop in this scrapyard. My name is George Serrano, aka The Don.
I'm Gregory Thomas, aka GT Rebirth.
And your pal is Maximus.
And remember, whether you throw fits or forks, use a shovel, or feel the rage burning up inside you, it doesn't cost a thing to be a good person, but I already know you guys are good people, so never forget that we are the clique, and always remember that you, yes you, are worthy.